Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to 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 Skid Row Studios.
We're listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
Can you please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe.
Okay.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio with the kings of internet radio, Jake Belcher, Brant Thoman.
All right, you're listening to Grand Theft Audio Radio. This is Jake Belcher.
And I'm Brant Thoman.
And we appreciate you tuning in for another action-packed episode.
Indeed, here at Skid Row Studios in lovely downtown Los Angeles.
It is a lovely day out there today.
It's supposed to be absolutely beautiful the entire week.
So I can dig it.
After a week of...
Do we have any rain, like, on the schedule?
Not that I've seen. The five-day forecast I'm seeing shows us getting warmer for the next couple of days, and then it'll drop off back down into the low 80s, which means... There's no rain in the future. Maybe a little May gray in the morning, but that's something we get kind of used to here. We get the May gray and the June gloom. It isn't until July that we don't have to worry about that.
So I can safely go home, take the tarps off my roof, and hope that there's no rain this week?
Yes.
So just so it looks nice to the other neighbors?
Sure, sure. Good luck on that. That'll be fun.
That's always a good time. Apparently, my other neighbors are bastards. I had the city come out to my house this weekend and look at my lawn and tell me that I needed to, mow my lawn more often.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily I just mowed it the day before they got there, so the guy didn't even look at it. Everything was clean and nice. He's like, oh, you have to mow your lawn more, sir. I'm like, what are you talking about? Look at it, it's really nice. Pick on that guy mm-hmm. on that guy. I was totally selling out my neighbors. His lawn is too long.
It's got to be the across the street neighbors.
Oh yeah,
they're such peaches. So
yeah,
much
let's
fun.
Not say who they are.
No, I'm not gonna say their names, but I'm just I don't even remember their names. I just remember them from years past and how polite they were and so pleasant to live near.
They help in so many ways. I'm sure that's the way they think it. Like, they're vigilantes for the neighborhood, and they're going to make sure that there's not a car that's been sitting there too long.
They won't join the neighborhood watch, but they certainly will watch the neighborhood for anything that they don't like.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So
I didn't even have a chance. My weekend was busy as hell. Did you do anything exciting in yours?
Not really. I kind of vegged out with the time off that I had. It was a very long weekend at work. Lots of different shifts at different times. So
you had a real working weekend.
I did have a working weekend. I worked every single day this weekend. So, but you know what? I'm never opposed to putting money in my pocket at the end of the day.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's quite nice. And I mean, I worked a Sunday night shift, which doesn't happen very often. And we were surprisingly busy for a Sunday night.
Oh, that's nice.
And next Sunday is the mother of all days for any restaurant.
Father's Day?
Mother's Day, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Surprisingly, Father's Day does not really ever get that busy. It's usually
because
more...
Mother stays home and cooks.
Well, there's that. It's either that or Dad wants to barbecue.
Uh-huh.
I mean, since it lands in June, it's the perfect opportunity for, kicking off a barbecue weekend, something like that. So we don't get a lot of business on Father's Day. But Mother's Day, well, we're booked solid.
Well, so that'll be a good weekend for you coming up then.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's working. I think there's all but one employee who has a shift, and the one employee who doesn't have a shift is a mother. So that's why she gets the day off.
Oh, that's nice. Your company has a heart.
A little bit.
Does she usually work that day?
No, in the three, well, I guess this will be my fourth Mother's Day there. She has not worked.
I mean, is that a shift she usually works?
Not
specifically Mother's Day.
Right.
I mean, Sunday at that time?
No. She doesn't usually work Sundays, period. But we were all told ahead of time, everyone will be working on Mother's Day with the exception of Sherry. And it's like, okay. And we all know that. We're all fine with that because she's going to go see her kids and, you know, she should have Mother's Day off.
Yeah.
So, good for her. But what's great is later on in this hour, we're going to have a good friend of the show and a good friend of mine, Ben Carpenter, and his band, The Future in 1989, will be coming in.
Week's band of the week.
Last week's band of the week.
Curtailing into this week.
Right. Unfortunately, the technical difficulties that occurred on Thursday made it impossible for us to get an interview in last week. So it's just kind of carrying over for a day. We're kind of making up for the loss of Thursday with today.
Yeah, and we do hope that you guys have enjoyed them. Yeah. We have another one lined up starting tomorrow that I'm excited about.
Excellent. And we're going to be premiering the new song from The Future in 1989 when they are in studio. So
I like that.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. So we're looking forward to having them in. But hey, it's Monday, and Monday means the weekend wrap-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got lots of fun things that went on over the weekend. It's a great time to be an LA sports fan.
Yeah, it doesn't seem too bad. There's a lot of good things going on there.
Yeah, we've got...
As an LA sports fan, what are you most excited about amongst the litany of stories?
Definitely the Lakers' success. There was a little concern earlier on for me, just before the playoffs, that I didn't know if they were going to... be, you know, full power and ready to go for a charge at the championship. But it certainly seems like they're doing fine. They're up 3-1 on Denver. They won yesterday 92-88. So that was a nice big win for them. And over the weekend, the Clippers also took a lead in their series, a 2-1 lead over the Memphis Grizzlies. And they play again this evening in Memphis. So that should make for another good game. But I think the biggest winning team right now certainly seems to be the Los Angeles Kings. They swept the St. Louis Blues 4-0 in their series in the second round. And this is the farthest they've gotten in 15 years.
So does that mean 4 more wins and then I start paying attention?
Potentially. Well, I don't know. You said you probably wouldn't even tune in until there was a game 4 or a game 7 or something. Yeah. So.
Okay, I'll up it a little bit and I will watch some finals games if they make it.
If they make it, absolutely. So, yeah, they are just 4 wins away from making it to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Do they know who they have in the next round?
Not yet. All the other hockey matchups have been much closer, to say the least. But the Kings just seem to be able to kind of slip on through by. They've beaten the two of the top 4 teams in the entire NHL. And they're coming in as an 8th seed. That's pretty much unheard of.
Are the other two of the 4 best still alive?
That's an excellent question. I believe they are. Let me bring up their stats here because it's funny how they put that stuff all the way to the back. It's either going to be
Phoenix. Be lucky they even wrote about it. It's hockey.
It's either going to be Phoenix or Nashville. The Coyotes lead 3-1 right now. The next game is tonight at Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And you know, on the Eastern Conference, we've got the series tied between New York and Washington at 2-2. And the New Jersey Devils have a 3-1 lead over the Philadelphia Flyers, and they play on Tuesday night. So we're slowly getting to the final 4 of our NHL hockey playoffs, and then on to the finals. So our hopes are with the Kings and a speedy win against whoever it is they're going to face off against. Hopefully it's Phoenix because it's a much shorter trip in regards to travel time and practice time.
So, I'm going to give you your hopes are with them. I'm not quite ready to get behind them and give my hopes to them yet.
Okay.
I might give like a little attention, but I'm not quite putting my hopes that direction yet.
So, it's been a really great week. The only thing we continue to miss is having some kind of professional football team. Now, granted, we do have the USC Trojans, which is as close to a professional football team as we've got right now, and certainly looking forward to their unimpeded season next year in regards to any suspensions, and they've got their scholarships back, so look forward to.
I think this is when they start losing scholarships this year.
Oh, so the first 2 years they didn't lose any scholarships?
Minimal.
So the next couple of years they're going to drop off a couple of others.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate. But I don't think they have problems recruiting guys out here to USC.
It's unlikely, especially if they go on and they have as good of a season as they're projected to.
Yeah, they should be the Pac-12 champions and heading into the Rose Bowl at the very least, if not a national championship.
That title. Is correct, sir. So
that'll be pretty awesome. Did you go out and see any movies this weekend?
Nope.
Neither did I. But apparently a lot of people did because over the weekend, the Avengers broke the all-time record for a single weekend opening with over 200 million sales in ticket sales in the United States and Canada.
Wow.
Blew out Harry Potter 8 part 2, whatever it was. Yeah, 7 part 2, which had $169.9 million its opening weekend. And they also had like IMAX tickets that were even more expensive than the 3D tickets that helped get them to that point.
Are there any like caveats to this biggest opening ever? Because it's always like the biggest opening ever from a film on a Thursday or the biggest opening ever from a film on a...
It just says that they're riding a tsunami of Twitter love as well, and they piled up $203 million, and it beats the Deathly Hallows, and it doesn't really have a caveat on it. It's because it did open up on a Friday, and it only was the three-day weekend.
Uh-huh.
So granted, they had $285 million in the bank from the worldwide release. It doesn't even say how much it made over the worldwide release over this weekend, but I have to imagine they're already at over a half a billion dollars in ticket sales for this movie.
Probably, because you said they were almost at 200 last week, right?
They were 285 on Friday from Carl. He told us that. And then with the 200 million here, plus I would imagine another 100 million minimum from the worldwide market, the international market. It's just insane.
I think it's ridiculous to read some of these people's recounts like, I've seen it 9 times already.
Why would I understand it's supposed to be a really spectacular film, and I am really looking forward to seeing it, but 9 times in one weekend?
Mm-hmm.
What did you 9 times?
Yep.
So did you go home and shower at least from day to day so that at least you smelled good when you went into the theater when you started watching it?
I don't know that they did. I mean, it's a pretty long film. I mean, it's not crazy long.
223?
That's long.
That's a pretty long movie. But with that many characters, there's going to be a lot of stuff that you're going to have to cover in that. It seems like they did a pretty good job of it. But
okay, did any other movies make many money this weekend?
Not a single other movie topped double-digit millions. All of the second highest film was Think Like a Man. So for the third week in a row, it's continued to have some decent momentum. It only made $8 million this weekend. And that's
pretty decent.
It's decent.
More than I made this weekend.
Right. And especially going up against The Avengers, which was just released in so many theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But number three, The Hunger Games moved back up to, and they made $5.7 million. The lucky one came in fourth with 5.5. The Pirates Band of Misfits, they dropped pretty dramatically, dropped down to number five with 5.4 million.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, The Avengers is a little boy movie. I mean, there's a lot of nerds who are like pretending that it's awesome and they're adults.
Right.
But it's a little boy movie.
It's definitely aimed at the boy demographic, so they're not going to want to go out and see the Pirates. The 5-year engagement dropped to six with 5.1 million, followed by The Raven, Safe, Chimpanzee, and number 10, The Three Stooges.
So nothing new except for The Avengers got in. I know there were some awful films.
There were some other very small releases that came out, but no, nothing else that was in its first week of release.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting. I'm curious. I know I am fairly certain that The Avengers will hold on to the number one slot this upcoming weekend as well.
Do you know when the next like big movie that comes out is?
I think it's not this Friday, but the next Friday. We've got... I think Battleship comes out.
Oh, come on. No one's going to go see that. There's no way.
Well, Rihanna's getting all this press right now. I mean, she was on Saturday Night Live this weekend, and that caused a little bit of a ruckus there. She didn't show up for the dress rehearsal on Saturday afternoon.
What did they do? Did they keep her on?
Oh, yeah. They kept her on. She was just too big of an act. But Lorne Michaels did express his frustration with her not being there because, I mean... When you get invited to go see Saturday Night Live, if you get lucky enough to get tickets, you're going to get tickets to one of two shows. You're either going to get the dress rehearsal show, and then you're filed out, and you're going to see everything that you're going to potentially see on the night broadcast, unless there's something that didn't work or ran too long and they have to cut it. But to go there hoping to see, granted, you're going to see Eli Manning as your host, but Rihanna
is
was
he who hosted it?
He was the host. And
did you watch any of it?
I didn't watch any of it. I've seen a couple of clips. There was one where he was dressed in drag, like it kind of reminded me as if he was might be trying to be part of that RuPaul's drag race or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. on the Bravo or Logo network. Mm-hmm. He's not as camera friendly or camera savvy as his brother Eli is. So,
He's older and more confident, and I'm sure that he's had more experience in front of it, mm-hmm. because he's been so much bigger for so much longer.
Yeah, yeah. But being in New York and having won now two championships with the Giants there, Eli was probably a big draw for a lot of people. But Rihanna didn't show up for the dress rehearsal, so you know the people who were there for the dress rehearsal kind of got gypped because they were expecting to see two performances by her, and. Her people claimed that she was feeling ill, but several of the cast members saw her walking around throughout the day and didn't appear to be ill at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then they released another thing saying, well, she did have to go in for a penicillin shot. It's like, the only thing I know that penicillin works on anymore is the clap. So it's a shame she was feeling like, not that I'm saying that she had it, I would never insinuate that Rihanna might have the clap, but that's the only thing I know that penicillin kind of works on these days. Usually it's amoxicillin or some kind of derivative of penicillin.
I don't want to go like a gross direction, but I don't even really know what the clap is.
Gonorrhea?
Okay, that's...
STD, that's just not fun?
I mean, I know it's an STD. I just didn't know that it was... It's a nice word for gonorrhea.
Yes, it's a much nicer word for gonorrhea.
Wow, that's...
Gonorrhea is just the worst. I mean, of all the different STDs that you can get, I think gonorrhea has the worst name. I mean, herpes doesn't sound as bad.
Herpes sounds pretty bad.
It sounds pretty bad, but gonorrhea, it's just such a long name, and it just sounds like it would be horrible down there. Because, like, crabs and warts and stuff like that, those are all things we hear about, and they are gross, but they just don't sound as gross.
I hope no one's eating their breakfast while they're listening to us.
I hope they're not either. They should be well past breakfast at this point.
This is awful. Well, not in Hawaii.
You're right.
I think that we have a big base of people who are hanging out in paradise who decide that, hey, what's going on in Grand Theft Audio this morning?
Right. Let's get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and listen to what's going on in Grand Theft Audio.
You know, I couldn't blame them because us in paradise, that's everything anyone could ever need.
Exactly. In fact, that's all we need is to be in paradise.
Okay, hey, before we move on from our movie and entertainment thing, there is actually a pretty big movie opening this weekend that I probably am going to see.
Okay.
That's Dark Shadows.
Oh, of course. That's right. Dark Shadows with Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter and Tim Burton directing. So once again, a make-upped Johnny Depp will be living in a wacky world thanks to Tim Burton.
Okay, how many movies can fit that bill?
What do you mean?
That you just...
Let's see. Sweeney Todd?
Yes.
Let's see. Edward Scissorhands?
Of course.
Of course. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the other ones that the two of them have worked on recently. Because I'm not as adept at them as I would think. Can you think of some?
Yeah. How about Willy Wonka and the Charlie?
Yeah, yeah,
the Chocolate Factory.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. There you go.
And you've also got Alice in Wonderland.
Oh yeah, that was bad. But yes, he was fully made up.
It's kind of what he does now. He kind of plays the same role with a different hat on.
Yeah, different hat or different makeup, because as Tonto, he's going to be all made up for that entire
thing. It's always the pale face.
Yep, always the pale face having to put on the makeup.
It is actually, I'm kind of annoyed by him. I would like to see him do something with like a different type of personality.
Yeah, I
don't know that he's capable of it.
Has he done, I can only think of one like action film that I recall him doing, and that was that hockey one where he was trying to find the bomb that was in the hockey arena.
Nick of Time?
Was that what it is? I think so. I think that's the only thing I can recall him doing that didn't have him just really made up, like, with the face paint. So, because even...
Well, I mean, like, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, and he...
I forgot about Once Upon a Time.
Was really made up in that. And I mean, he has other things. It's just been a long time since he has done anything that... If you don't like dudes and chicks makeup, that you're not going to be that interested.
Yeah, it's either Bruckheimer or Burton that he wants to work with. So
he does seem to kind of get stuck with like the same directors all the time.
Yeah, well, when you wind up signing on a new three-picture deal for the new Pirates of the Caribbean,
and he signed two of those, so well, like six of them total that he's
I believe there's going to be six total that he'll have been in.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yep.
And he's making so much money.
Oh, they say that after the run of all six movies with the stuff that he's going to get on the back end of those films and everything, $500 million just for him.
Well, I know that he's already made $600 million off of the first four. So he probably will get up to a full $1 billion by the time the next two come out.
Johnny Depp, a billionaire.
I'm sure that he deserves it somehow. Like, there has to be some reason that people like the guy.
He's obviously talented. It's just... You know, has he ever been nominated for anything? I can't recall.
Last year they nominated him for The Tourist, like the Golden Globes did, because they wanted to get him out there and be like, hey, look who we have coming to our party.
Right.
Because that's what they do.
That's what they do, especially those bigger ones.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
So.
Hey, we're going to go to our first commercial break of the day, our first
music
break of the day. This is a track from... The Future in 1989 called Maybe Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Charlie Parker looked like Buddha.
No more sad.
And that was Dull Life, Obstacle One by The Future in 1989. And before that, we had, what was the first one? I'm blanking on the name all of a sudden. Damn it.
Oh, the first one was called Maybe Nothing.
Maybe Nothing. That's right. We played that a couple of times the last week. And they're due here anytime now. So when they arrive, we'll get them in the studio and we'll talk about what they've got coming up and everything. So continuing on with our weekend wrap-up, how was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty good, man. Thanks for asking. I got to wrap it up in the best way possible. My weekend was fairly crappy, but at least I got to wrap it up with a good trip to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Which always puts me back in a better mood.
Of course.
My Sunday, are you familiar with Big Sunday? It's like this day where all these corporations are supposed to get together and do volunteer work.
They sign their employees up to volunteer?
Yeah. I mean, basically, it's like a free slave work day.
Right.
So
nice.
I got, my wife works for a fairly large company, and they decided that we're going to go work at this book fair.
Awesome.
Which was, you know, sounded like a really fun idea and go there and give out books to people. I didn't even really know what a book fair was.
Right.
I just thought it was something where authors came out and were like, hey, look at my book.
Right.
In this case, it was like an outreach thing where you gave them into the community. And
so you guys were passing out books?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's kind of cool.
That was kind of fun. Get all these kids coming through and choosing books. And here was the drag part about it. Look, the company that she's with didn't have anything to do with organizing it. We were just volunteering
there. Right.
The people who organized it, I don't think, took into account that the neighborhood they were in was like 90-something percent Hispanic. I mean, it was definitely a Mexican-speaking neighborhood.
Spanish-speaking neighborhood, for sure.
And all the books were in English. So it's just like, I felt like it was I was glad to help out and give out these
pictures. What's this company trying to say to these people?
Speak English.
Yes.
Speak English.
Please, read and speak it.
This was at the Children's Bureau on Magnolia. And it was a beautiful center. I mean, what these people do for the community, like they deal with about somewhere between 500 and 750 different families in the neighborhood. I mean, they're doing really good work. I just, you know me, I'm not a good Indian. I'm not good at just showing up at one of these events and being like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, this is the way that should be. That's the way that should be. When I walk in, I'm like, oh, we could do this better. We could do that better. Why are we doing this? It made me realize that I do want to be involved with the same effort next year, but I'm going to try to make an effort to find Spanish-speaking books for the people who want them.
Yeah. There should have been a nice mix of both English and Spanish. Yeah.
I mean, the things that were really popular were picture books. Because picture books, you know, you don't need words
right,
for those.
Right. Exactly. Picture books, you can put the words to it in whatever language you want.
Yeah.
So.
And then besides that, I went to a pretty nice party on Saturday down in Brentwood. It's always nice to be at one of these big, classy, almost mansion estate places.
Nice.
So that was fun. It was for a St. Andrew's Society, a Scottish heritage group. So it was pretty nice. I have avoided missing most of the things I didn't want to see. I managed to avoid all my friends are like, hey, let's go watch the fight together. I want to go watch Mayweather and Miguel Cotto.
Yep. Completely forgot about that in the sports wrap up. I'm not a big boxing fan, so that's probably why it fell out of my brain. Mm-hmm. So
Mayweather managed to stay undefeated again. Continued to stay undefeated. I don't know what it is about that guy. He's obviously a badass fighter, but he is a pussy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's walking around to the ring with Justin Bieber is one of the people that led him to the ring.
Why does everybody want to be this guy's friend?
Justin Bieber, Triple H, and Lil Wayne, and I think 50 Cent was there also. Were like the four like celebrity people that wanted to lead him to the ring.
That was his celebrity entourage.
It's ridiculous. I mean, what did that group of people have to sit around and talk about? Each one of them throws it in some crazy direction.
Yeah, I can't imagine the conversation between Triple H and Justin Bieber.
Impossible. And if it leads to Justin Bieber being on Raw, I'm going to fucking scratch my eyes out.
Well, don't be surprised.
I just pray that it doesn't.
He's going to wind up in a match as a tag team match with Triple H against some other...
Dude, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, one thing I saw this weekend, I can't even believe I forgot about this. Did you watch the Laker game?
I only saw the highlights on SportsCenter.
Do you know that a lady walked out onto the court in the middle of the game?
No.
Like she, around the end of the game, there was a lady who claimed that she was lost. And she just waltzed onto the court. And the police ran out and they grabbed her and she was immediately arrested for trespassing. And she was released, but she had to come back into court today.
Right.
Here's one of the crazy things about it. The girl that ran onto the floor is the same girl that was stalking Kenyon Martin when he played for Denver. But he's no longer on the team anymore. But this is the same lady who was arrested for stalking a player on the same team that the Lakers were playing. And she just says that she was drunk at a bachelorette party for the game and just wandered onto the court.
And got lost and wandered onto the court. Didn't realize that there was a basketball game going on said court. Uh-huh. At the time that she did, because she was lost.
But, okay, so another report I just read from Yahoo Sports is that the woman was screaming when she went onto the court, "Where's Kenyon? Where's Kenyon?" So she's a crazy person.
Yeah. There's some help that needs to be given there.
There's some absolute ridiculousness. I mean, that's awful.
Yeah.
Okay, also in sports that you forgot to mention was Albert Pujols managed to hit his first home run this weekend, finally.
Finally. The Angels finally have something to, you know, to have a reason to sign that paycheck for him.
Uh-huh.
It's like, hey, all right, you hit the big stick. Good. It's about time. Now let's see if about 50 more of those over the season.
I think it was funny. Did you see what the Angels did after he hit his home run?
No.
Except for the player that was on the on-deck circle when Pujols was running around the bases, they all ran down the tunnel inside, and he came back to an empty dugout, so nobody was there to congratulate him. Like they just
as like a prank?
As like a prank, the whole team ran down the tunnel away from the dugout so that when he came back there was nobody there to give him high fives or
wow. That's pretty funny actually.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I mean did he get a high five from the guy in the on deck circle?
Yes.
So he got one high five.
From and then the guy that was on base with him, Mike Trout.
Okay.
He gave him five at home plate, and then the guy that was on home base, who was in the batter circle, on deck circle, gave him five. And then
he walked out to an empty bench.
Nobody. That's pretty funny.
I think that's pretty good. That's as good as that's even better than the shaving cream pie whenever you're getting the interview.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, hey, hooray for the Angels. They finally got a home run out of Albert Pujols. It was well worth the money they spent.
Congratulations, Angels. Yeah. Okay, one other thing that was kind of cool about my weekend, did you go out and see the super moon?
Yes, I did. The largest moon of the year.
Uh-huh. How did it live up to the hype to you?
It looked a little bigger.
A little bigger.
A little bigger.
But not that much bigger.
No, not really.
I mean, it wasn't like it was...
I've seen the moon in positioning, like, in our atmosphere where it looks enormous. Like, uh-huh. As it's near mountains, it looks like it's this giant moon.
It looks huge.
It looks huge, but that's obviously just an optical effect from the way it passes into our line of view. But when I went out and looked at it, it was just like, okay, it looks a little bigger. And everyone was, I saw pictures posted on Facebook. I went out and took a picture of the super moon as best I could. And it's like, well, zoom out a little bit if you really zoomed in that close, because it doesn't make it look that much more super.
Yeah, it's not that amazing. I was a little disappointed on it.
I'm more impressed when there's a blue moon, when you get the two full moons in a single month. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is awesome.
So,
and then before we go to a quick commercial break, because our first guests have shown up, I do want to say that I'm saddened this week by the loss on Friday of Adam Yauch from the Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad to see him go. It was also even sadder Saturday night tuning into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions and watching his group get inducted into that as he passed the day before. I mean, I know they filmed it a couple weeks ago.
Right, right.
But the whole combination was really awful.
And there was one other death this weekend. Mm-hmm. Kind of a big 60s TV star, or relatively big. He was on the Andy Griffith Show. George Lindsay, who played Goober Pyle, who was Gomer's brother.
Okay, look, it's sad the guy died, but he was one of the most annoying characters.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. He and Gomer Pyle were just two obnoxiously annoying characters.
Awful.
And how Gomer Pyle wound up getting his own USMC TV show. Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Well, ooh. I think that Goober got his own peanut butter and strawberry jam combination.
Yes, from the Smucker's company.
Yeah,
the Goobers.
So he's managed to live on and get to an even higher level of life.
Yeah, so.
Awful. Hey, we're going to go to one more track from the group that's joining us next. This is called Original Sedative, and this, once again, is The Future in 1989.
Stand up, too. Stand up, too. Dizzy Ross, loudest, dirtiest, Grammys, Ross Hogs, dirty stank. London, stand up, too. Rescue, when I call it, I still roadie. Block star, give me the beat, I let me through. London City forever, you're not a steel creep. Ain't no stopping me ever, you best move. Live, oh, get out, rep it with redemption. Worldwide critics acclaim my big news. Showtime, main event, you can't defeat. Dizzy Ross, not on your nelly, I can't lose.
Turn up the music, let's get out on the floor. I like to move it, come and give me some more. Watch me getting physical, out of control. Put your hands up, make you put your hands up, put your hands up.
It's that 808 bump, make you
put your hands up, make you put your.
The guys who did that to us in studio. Hey, Branch, why don't you introduce our first guest of the show?
All right. Coming in and joining us at this time are the band members of The Future in 1989.
That's a good reason to leave your headphones on.
Mr. Ben Carpenter and Skylar Champion.
Hey.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Morning, gentlemen.
Thanks for being here. We've enjoyed playing a bunch of your guys' tracks over the last week. It's awesome. There's a nice range of sounds in it, which I always like. Sometimes you hear like some people's songs, you're like, oh, okay, that's definitely them over and over again.
Yeah.
And thanks for your understanding on the technical difficulties on Thursday and being able to come out on today on the short notice that it was.
It happens. We just paid you back just now with the technical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We're even. So how'd you guys start making music together? Like, how did the future of 1989 get together?
We met. We were introduced by mutual friends in 2005.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, in 2005, and at the time I was making music for film and television, and Skylar, you know, had his own setup going and had been composing himself, and. We met up, we kind of teamed up and started collaborating on film and television, you know, music. And kind of got started that way. And we just got really heavily into synthesizers and electronic music and, you know, kind of branched out into, you know, a thing where we wanted to do a live electronic show. And and yeah, I mean, that's where we're at now.
A good timing with it. I mean, it seems like that type of music is getting more and more popular by the day. You have like some artists like Skrillex and people that are just destroying it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we just been noticing like, I mean, like one out of every like three or four commercials has a dubstep track in it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just kind of everything's coming together for us now, you know?
It's a great time for the genre, definitely. Yeah, like Skrillex, Deadmau5, acts like that. I mean, it's... You know, basically, it is pushing out into, you know, like commercialism right now, but it's quietly just become a huge genre. And like you said, yeah, it's a great time for.
And I think that somehow, like, the technology is catching up to the point of being able to have cool live shows. I don't know if either of you guys watched the Grammys this year when Deadmau5 had that performance with the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
It really was.
And from like where it was years ago of like just people laying down like one track and you kind of like rap over it or something, or you kind of was doing
yeah, exactly. Like now it's like anything you can do in the studio, you can replicate live. Like,
and, you know, the playing field has really been leveled. Access, you know, to equipment has just gotten, you know, has gotten really prevalent. So, I mean, we have the same access to the equipment that someone, you know, like a Skrillex has and whatnot. And you don't have to have a ton of money to make the music anymore. And, yeah, the accessibility is really nice.
A good laptop, and you can really get some start putting down tracks pretty easily.
Studios have become, you know, have become almost irrelevant. Yeah.
So how does like one thing about this music is it seems like there is some like samples or things like that get used kind of by everybody. Like,
yeah.
What comes? How does it come down to like, oh, I'm allowed to use this one or I'm not allowed to use that one?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, there's the legalities of the whole thing are pretty blurry. You know, if you're doing a cover, you definitely need to get clearance for that. However, if you're doing remixes, there's different, you know, legal definitions of remixes that kind of allow you to use them without permission.
Yeah, I mean, we skirt that line here for sure, too.
Yeah. definitely. There's some blurry legal area with it, so.
That's what lawyers are for.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of, like, an artist, an electronica artist, actually getting sued for, like, using somebody's samples?
Yeah, you know what? We heard a story not too long ago of Deadmau5 actually was being paid to create these loops for actually a company that we use, their software, ImageLine. He's being paid to create those loops, and they're supposed to be royalty-free, and you're supposed to be able to use them in your productions. Uh-huh. And apparently some guy put out an album with some of Deadmau5's loops on it. Deadmau5's team sued the guy, and it kind of ImageLine basically had to scramble and redefine, you know, what royalty-free was and what legalities were for using their loops. So it was kind of a bad-spirited thing. I mean, especially since he started out that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
but,
and being the fact that you would hope that having more artists in this genre to help build the genre would only bring more people into his listening, as listeners to him, to kind of pull, that's kind of unfortunate.
Look, I don't know the guy, but he seems like he's kind of a dick.
He's a total dick.
I wasn't going to say it, but...
No, the guy's that's so funny because, I mean, coming into this, he was a guy that we, like, you know, tried to emulate at the outset, but the more we learned about him, he's such a dick. Yeah,
the more interviews we read, the more we were just like, oh, man.
Why did we like this guy in the first place? Damn it.
That whole thing that he pulled with Skrillex's phone number across the front of his shirt.
That was pretty funny, I guess.
It's funny, but it's pretty mean-spirited.
It's definitely mean-spirited, and he was really Skrillex's mentor.
Yeah.
So that was really like kind of a big brother, kind of hazing thing, like welcome to the big show.
Yeah, it's kind of like there would be no Eminem if there was no Dr. Dre. There'd be no Skrillex if there was no Deadmau5.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, okay, what brought you to the name The Future in 1989?
You know, I've got about 10 different versions of
we've gone through so many names.
What were some of the more than exotic names aside of what you wound up with?
Yeah, you know, we weren't actually too exotic. We're keeping it simple. We were Carpenter and Champion, you know, for a while. And then
sounds like a tag team, like wrestling duo.
It's too law firmy. So it was just we wanted a name that when you saw it, you're like, what's the future in 1989?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know,
actually, that probably would have been pretty cool if you had like an album cover with you guys in like suits from 1989, looking like businessmen, and that would have been, you know, and then because you could have had Carpenter and Champion there, and that would have really would have made a funny little start. But
yeah, you know, we're children of the 80s, you know, so you know, we grew up with, you know, all this futuristic science fiction, mm-hmm. and with their concepts of what the future is going to be like. And in the 80s was full of those movies, you know. And to me, like, the coolest thing was always their concept of the future. Not the future itself, but mm-hmm. but their concept of it. So, you know, it's kind of a play on that, you know, the music we're kind of making is like, you know, a projected future, mm-hmm. you know, kind of deal.
It's kind of funny you say that. You think about like in the 1950s, how they talked about flying cars and all the things that we were going to have by the 1970s, and none of that came around. And in the 1980s, we see all this stuff, and now in the 2000s, we're actually starting to see this stuff.
I'm still waiting for my hoverboard.
Yeah, exactly.
We all are. We were promised jetpacks.
Not to continue to go back to Skrillex, but I'm talking about the future and stuff. Do you guys listen to the new album Bangarang?
Yes, definitely.
That track from with him in the Doors.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's that little snippet in there that is Jim Morrison talking about like seeing what he thought the future of music is. It's scary how dead on he was.
Oh, he was dead on, no doubt about it.
I mean, the whole thing was about like having this electronic stuff at your fingertips and being able to just press buttons and make your music.
If you were alive today, I mean, I think it would be incredible. Yeah, I think he would be in electronic music now, if he were.
Be one or the other. I would imagine him either being completely into it or completely opposed to it because he, as the poet and then the songwriter that he became, you know, wanting to stick maybe to those roots, especially if he was alive today, being as old as he would be at this point. I mean,
definitely.
He'd be opening for the Beach Boys, or the Beach Boys might be opening for him if he was still alive today.
I mean, he's also a guy that bucked convention, so...
Yeah.
You know, so I would have to imagine he'd be a guy that, you know, would be dabbling in mm-hmm. it.
I think it's only a matter of time till we see some of these older generation singers start utilizing this electronic
music. Dude, it's crazy. On that new Skrillex album, I mean, that is the Doors with him.
That
is the rest of the band in studio making music with just a regular dude. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got, you know, on our EP, our current EP out right now, Dirty Bomb, we've got a Temptations remix. So, I mean, there's guys that would never, you know, have been involved in any electronic music. And, you know, it's the first track off our album. Mm-hmm. The track is I'm Losing You, Hometown Glory. And, I mean, that's an act you would never hear in electronic music. And we kind of, you know, try to take it there, try to, you know, get artists involved that, you know, wouldn't normally hear on electronic tracks.
I think in many ways you're going to run into being able to do more and more of this stuff as the older generations pass on and die out and they can't perform that music anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't hear it in any other way live. So why not go the electronic version?
Definitely. No doubt about it.
Did you guys pay attention at all to Coachella? What was going on out there?
Yeah. You know, we did a little bit, you know, that's gotten to a point where, you know, the whole thing started with like, you know, supposed to be for small independent artists. And it's kind of like South by Southwest. It's kind of gotten to the point where all the big acts now are envious of it. So now they're taking it over. And it's just like every other festival now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The whole idea, though, of bringing back a hologram person to perform with you.
Yeah, we talked about this at length and very uncomfortable with it.
What is most off-putting to it about you?
That Tupac hated Dre.
And you know, and he had a straight relationship with Snoop at the end of his life.
Yeah, it's not like at the end they weren't like buddy buddy at all. Like, you know,
that's not it for me. I mean, that's part of it, but you know, I was amazed and horrified at the same time.
Yeah.
Apparently Tupac's mother was happy about it and brought a smile to her face, but
and I'm sure a a check to her pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
she's got to clear all that stuff. So
it's you know, it's a slippery slope for like live acts like us.
Yeah.
You know, for the future of live music, I mean, this they could get really carried away with such a thing.
This is how I kind of see it. That type of technology is going to wind up being utilized where you guys will wind up doing like a huge show, say like in London. You're going to be in London, but what's going to happen is there's going to be stadiums throughout either all of England or throughout Europe, and you guys will be performing, and there'll be that virtual version of you also doing that on stage. Okay, so people are watching.
When it's you, it must sound a lot hotter, right?
I'm a fan now. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it really would lend itself to being able to play to a worldwide audience, one show, one time only, boom. And you're in every stadium around the world, or at a major stadium,
Definitely.
Yeah. So.
I think I heard about a Japanese act where they're all holograms, where they're all projected on there. Some pop group.
A hologram act, like.
And that's where the thing is headed. That's really the biggest fear of the whole thing.
I remember when I heard about the Gorillaz coming out, and they did all like
that's right,
cartoon version of them all on stage or something.
Yeah, it was like the same technology, I guess, with the Tupac thing that the Gorillaz did at. I think it was the Grammys or
yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah,
crazy music is. There's just so many different directions you can go with it. Do you ever find that that there's any like tracks that you really want to touch, but you have like too much reverence for, or you think that you can kind of get in and chop up anything?
I think we can pretty much get in and chop up anything. You know, one of the acts that we were really emphatic about wanting to remix was Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was an act that, you know, I grew up listening to quite a bit. And, you know, that sound, I feel like that industrial sound kind of inspired, you know, dubstep a lot, and the darkness and the heaviness of the whole thing. And we went through actually a handful of Nine Inch Nails remixes and until we finally landed at the one we, you know, recently released, which is March of the Pigs. Sorry. And, it's, you know, so we feel like we can pretty much, you know, we can pretty much remix anybody. There's definitely some acts that, like, you know, you have to treat with a great reverence, and you definitely don't want to, you know, force anything. And, you know, we won't just put something out just because we really want to, you know, remix this artist.
You got a couple of in mind for upcoming remixes that like ones you like bands you've really wanted to be able to touch on and remix?
You know, Yeahs were one of those groups. We got them on Dirty Bomb, and you know, Radiohead is definitely one of those acts that you know, love Tom York's voice. Their writing is incredible, real dark as well. And I don't know, Sky, what do you think?
You know, I mean, we're pretty much kind of open to like anything.
Awesome.
I mean, we've gone all over the place with people like we've tried to do remixes for, and pretty much if it's a good vocal, like the singing's great, we can make it happen.
I think, you know, Bowie is definitely one of those acts. You know, maybe Prince.
I
don't know. You know, our influences are wide ranging.
Justin Bieber's not on the list anywhere.
You know,
I wouldn't be opposed.
Right on.
If the money's right.
Yeah. Right, of course. As long as the check's big enough, I'll do it.
Exactly.
So I'm back to the Nine Inch Nails track. A couple of years ago, I remember that Trent Reznor started releasing like the little, I guess, like the loops and sounds and all those things for people to be able to like remix his stuff and do it on his own.
Yeah.
It seems like there's been a huge explosion since that happened. Do you think that he's kind of like done a disservice to himself by like teaching other people how to be able to do this?
I love it. You know, we actually talked about that. We would love to be able to like release an album with all the tracks individually so you can mix it the way you want it and kind of remix it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, at his point, like he's totally revered now. He's, you know, doesn't really have to worry about much, and it's probably just enjoyable for him to see, like, kind of like fans and other producers work with his stuff.
All right, man. Well, I do appreciate you guys bringing in this new track today. So we are going to now introduce the first time ever on anyone's broadcast. This is March of the Pigs, The Future in 1989. We'll be right back. Dang, that is hot. That's March of the Pigs, the future in 1989. I forget that I have to hit stop sometimes.
That one's not on us.
Yeah, that's right. Now I owe you guys again.
So you guys got some shows coming up in this summer for sure. Where are you guys planning on heading out to, and what have you got coming up?
Yeah, maybe we'll do a road trip.
we're gonna be playing some a few shows in Paris the first week of July.
Whoa, how do you get a gig in Paris? That's awesome.
You know, we actually had some business that coincided with it going out to Paris. So we're like, we need to book some shows while we're out there, promote Dirty Bomb. And, you know, French electro is really big and dubstep is as well over there. And we've kind of like grown a legion of fans in Spain and France.
Excellent.
So just wanted to kind of take advantage of it while we're over there.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Get a chance to get down there, maybe hit Lisbon or something. And
yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the French do have a very strong scene right now. I've never heard his name said. Mr. Ouizo, Mr. Ouzo, O-I-Z-U, whatever his name is from France.
Right, right. I mean, you know, David Guetta is another one who's just a gigantic act right now. Daft Punk, you know, Phoenix, Air, M83. I mean, it's a really, really rich musical scene in France.
When you guys put together like these tracks, where do you get that really hard industrial? Okay, once again with Skrillex, I mean, he always has those really jarring sounds. I mean, how do you find like these little bits and decide that, oh, we should be using this, we should be using this?
For us, it's been just experimentation, experimentation, experimentation.
Yeah, it's like you don't necessarily take like the synths that are already there, you kind of start making them your own and figuring out, like, you kind of have a sound in your head and you're like, all right, I got to figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, it's been a result of just an obsession with synthesizers and you know, experimenting with filters and LFO and just constantly doing it. And just, you know, the whole name of the game is discovery for us. You know, we're just like constantly trying to discover new sounds. And it's been crafted over a really long, long period of time.
How long does a track take you guys to put down?
You know, geez, that's a good question.
I mean, how long did it take you guys to get this first EP out?
The first EP, oh, Lord.
You've been working on it for a couple of years, it sounds like.
Oh, geez, it was really 2 years in the making. We were really trying to kind of establish our sound. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't sure if we wanted to go more electro. You know, we wanted to go more house. And kind of ended up in a dubstep area. And you know, my background is, you know, is punk bands and, you know, and just loud, you know, noisy music. And I've always loved electronic music. Grew up on like Aphex Twin and, you know, acts like that. And, you know, kind of married together. And, you know, I don't know. Sometimes tracks take us a week and it's just, you know, it's a really inspired process. And sometimes a few tracks have taken months.
Yeah. Yeah. It can really vary. I mean, like, for this EP, over the 2 years, we put together, like, 200 tracks, and three of them got released.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty much the ratio. And, you know, we're kind of still, you know, in the process of releasing a lot of those other remixes. You know, we just got to the point where, you know, we needed to put something out and really wanted a taste of all the remixes we've been building over the last 2 years. And we just felt like we found the best representation of our sound, you know, with Dirty Bomb.
Well, hopefully you'll feel free to keep sending them our way. We'll be more than happy to play them on the air.
It's our pleasure.
Really dig the music, so.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Where can people learn more about you guys and find your stuff?
We've got thefuture1989.com. We've got facebook.com/thefuture1989. And on Twitter.
Yeah, twitter.com/thefuture1989 or at thefuture1989.
Yeah, and
do you guys individually tweet or anything to your fans? Or?
Yeah, we do. We've actually got a pretty strong Twitter presence right now with @thefuture1989, and my personal Twitter is @spiritmath, and Skylar is @skylarchampion.
Yeah,
and yeah, we definitely interact a lot. We'll return, you know, any tweets that anyone tweets us, and you know, our huge thing has been interacting with people. We've been sending, like, our first, like, 1,000 fans, we, you know, sent a free copy of the album to.
Yeah.
And
that's badass.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's the type of thing you have to do in today's age. Like, make every listener feel special.
Exactly.
That way they tell their friends. And
yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely not saying, oh, you got to go down to the record store and pick this up.
Right.
It's aside of Amoeba and Poobah, those are the only two places I can actually think of that are actual like record stores still up and running.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and want to mention also Dirty Bomb is on iTunes.
Awesome.
And I mean, it was really the case with those first 1,000 fans that we'd rather have be in people's iPods than have the $2.97 buy it from iTunes. So.
Well, we really appreciate you guys coming in here so very much. We're going to play another one of your tracks here. We're going to play We Are the People.
Beautiful.
So, thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you for having me,
gentlemen. Thanks, guys.
We'll put up some links on our pages so people can find you guys easier.
Cool. Appreciate it.
Dig it.
Just a sexual bitch. Ooh.
Again, is The Future in 1989. That was a track called One. That movie, that music is so like pump you up and get you going.
Exactly.
It, I don't like to work out, but it almost makes me feel like I would actually go out and work out.
Yeah, definitely good workout music for sure. It's definitely going to keep you motivated.
And it was nice to hear those guys come in studio. We've been having the nice opportunity to be able to play their tracks. Mm-hmm. And we do appreciate you guys. So thanks very much. They actually sent over, before they even got out of here, another batch of songs.
Awesome.
So we have a whole bunch of new stuff that we should probably cut into like new intros and segments.
Yeah, new segments. And just as a nice little bit of filler for everyone to continue to get to know the music they got. With 200 tracks that they recorded over the last 2 years and then just releasing three, there's a lot to learn about.
No doubt. So that was wrapping up last week's into this week's Band of the Week. And later on, we're going to introduce you to our Band of the Week for this week. Super excited to have them also. They've also been friends of the show for a while. It's a group called May McDonough and Company.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get them live in studio at the end of this week as well.
That'll be great.
And that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun live at Carl's birthday party last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where the worst picture of me ever taken was taken. I still hate.
Well, hey, man.
I love the music, but I hate the show because of that one picture.
Just that one picture?
That one picture was enough to just make me say, F this. I will never show it. I've spent a long time trying to destroy everyone's computer that has accidentally downloaded it. I mean, it's
I'll
the definition of
mine.
Not good. It's not. Hey, does your computer work?
No, you're right. My computer's right, not working, sir. So.
Fuck that shit up. You got to do what you got to do. Okay, so we've done our week wrap up and what happened last weekend. I think it's time we start looking forward into the future and what's going to be coming up this week.
You mean the future of 2012?
The future actually in 2012. this is a in 2012 story. Now there's a lot of speculation about who is going to be the vice presidential pick on the Republican Party.
Okay, who are the lists of prime candidates?
Okay, the front runners are Jeb Bush.
Of course.
I mean, look, if you think that people are going to vote for anything that's going to get a Bush back into office, Mr. Mitt Romney, you're fucking crazy.
There's another George Bush that's going to be elected before Jeb is anyway.
Jorge Bush?
Yes.
You also have Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Okay.
And New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte.
There is a name that I actually know nothing about. The other ones I've heard, but this one is a senator I haven't heard of. So from New Hampshire, huh?
And then I guess the person who's really considered to be the front runner is Newt Gingrich.
Hmm. That would kind of make sense if you're going to try and solidify the party base to get the votes out.
Uh-huh.
But
none of these people are exciting.
Nope.
None of them are a hot bitch that I want to have sex with.
Yes.
Like Sarah Palin. I mean, this is just a bunch of boring looking dudes standing next to another boring looking dude.
Well, yeah, it certainly seems like after the Sarah Palin issue in the last election, they're shying away from women candidates once again. The GOP is the party of the white man. The white male. Let's put it that way.
Well, I don't know if I could go that far. I mean, I can definitely go with the white man, but I don't know if I can go with the white male. I mean, just because there's not one running there doesn't mean that it doesn't represent you and, yeah, and your interests.
You're right.
And most women didn't think that Sarah Palin represented them and their interests. That didn't make them a good thing in the end for the Republicans last time.
Did you ever see the HBO movie that they did about Sarah Palin and Woody Harrelson?
Did you ever see the Hustler version with Sarah J?
No, I didn't.
That shit was hot.
I bet. Especially if she looked like Sarah.
Yeah, but with bigger boobies and a smaller brain.
Is that really possible on the second part?
Yes, it is. Like, she was, it's a pretty nasty film. No, okay, I did see some of the HBO. Mm. It was good. I mean, it wasn't anything that was,
it wasn't, there's,
I don't,
nothing
think I
eye-opening.
Learned a thing from it.
Yeah, there's nothing eye-opening except for the fact that apparently when after deciding on her as the VP pick and having to coach her, like, there were so many second guessings of did we choose the right person to run with.
But even
game?
Then, that all came out then.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that was all in the news. It was mm-hmm. all being talked about.
Exactly.
So, like, I didn't learn anything from it, which was sad because I had hoped to get some type of a different perspective.
Yeah, but not really.
But all these people here, like, I have no interest in any of them. I can't believe that he would be dumb enough to think that a Jeb Bush is the right direction to go.
Well, I don't think it's him that's thinking that. I think that this is the GOP is saying to him, these are the people we think that would do very well with you. Based off of the interaction between Mitt and Newt during the debates, it certainly seems like guys who disagree so fervently with each other on stage when they're running for the same office, why would you want that guy to be your number two? You know, the man who's next in line to be president,
mm-hmm.
potentially. But Jeb Bush is just an awful thing to think of if that was to go on. If you're trying to go by name recognition to try and get people to, you know, to pine for the days of George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr.
Insanity.
Yeah, insanity.
It would be basically like, I do not care to win this election. I'm not sure why I'm even in it. So let's throw a Bush back on our ticket.
Yeah. Just to get him in some more national. We know who Jeb Bush is, not just that he's the brother and son of a president, of two presidents.
I don't trust anybody named Jeb. That okay. is way too fucking hillbilly for me.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if it's short for something.
That is a rapey word.
Yeah.
Hey, Jebediah?
Is it Jebediah? Is his name?
I mean, that's all I can think it could be short for.
Right.
That is a get you alone in the woods,
unless
tear
it's
down
like,
your pants.
Because his last name's Bush, unless not it's like his initials, like. If it was like James Edward Bush or something like that, then you might call him Jeb. Maybe. I don't know. But that's a scary scenario for me. It would definitely turn me away from potentially voting Republican in the next election.
Do you think there's any chance that you could? How much of a influence is the vice president on your selection in the general election anyways?
I like to think that the person that's going to be a heartbeat away from the presidency to be almost as good as the person who's running for the presidency himself, at least in his beliefs in, you know, I don't like having, like, when George Bush Sr. ran, he put Dan Quayle as his VP. And I've always heard that there were two reasons for that. Number one, there was the people wouldn't be thinking of potentially assassinating the president or wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be any danger towards President Bush because nobody wanted Dan Quayle as the VP.
What was
as far as the president.
What was the knock on him before he became vice president?
Dan Quayle? I wouldn't know.
Because I don't think that he had the reputation of being dumb like that whole potato thing happened later
right,
on.
Right, right. That all happened during during that first administration or the only administration of the first Bush presidency. So his leanings were more farther to the right than George Bush Sr.'s was, which is kind of surprising to think about. And that's why the party wanted him as their VP choice. I think the party has more of a say in who they want as the VP than the actual candidate himself. I know he has to sign off on it, but every Republican brain that's working on this campaign to take out to vote Obama out of mm-hmm. office. They're all going to throw out these names that they think are going to help solidify the party base. But I don't see anything exciting there that's going to make me want to go, wow, I like the idea of having, you know, a smart president and a smart vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think Biden was the best choice, but he was apparently the right choice. I don't know. I'm still curious as to see if he's going to hold on, if Biden will continue to be his vice presidential candidate or running mate in the upcoming election.
It look as dumb as he's been, and he said some retard ass things. He's not going to. Obama's not going to change it. Because if Obama changes course there, then that's like admitting that he was wrong on something. And
right.
You do not see him do that.
Nope. He won't do that. Unless Biden himself says that he doesn't want to be the vice president. That's the only way I see that not happening. And I think Biden likes his role right now.
Well, who wouldn't? I mean, that's the greatest job ever.
Mm-hmm. All you have to do is sit behind the president and clap at the speeches.
Huge check basically for doing nothing.
Yep. Get a nice little mansion and you get the Secret Service protecting you.
Make him go out and get you hamburgers in the middle of the night.
That's right.
Because that's what I would have mine doing.
Yeah, at least one of them. I need some Jack in the Box. Go get some.
Get to work, sucker. For me, there's been no election that's ever been. I've never chosen a different candidate because of the person that was running for vice president.
Right.
In the end, most presidents live, so it doesn't really make that big of a difference. So
I can't recall the last president that I don't think there was, in my lifetime. I don't think there's been a president that was. There were attempts, but. That died in office?
I mean, I am not going to vote for Obama. I could be influenced to vote for Obama if, say, John Cena was made vice president. Okay. I mean, somebody that this is like ridiculous. You're like, okay, I want to see what this person who has no business in office.
Right.
And then see what they could do there.
Right.
And that actually interests me. But mostly stuff suit, same interchangeable person and personality. Mm-hmm. They mean absolutely
just,
nothing.
Just different lawyers in different positions.
Yeah, that's all it really is. And the world has enough lawyers.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see which one of these people actually gets to pick up the nomination.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's none of those. Those could just be names that are floating out there because...
Is there anybody you think you would like to see there?
I would have to do a little more looking around. I'd like to see when the convention finally occurs. The speakers that they have at these conventions usually are the ones that I sit there and go, like, I have to admit, the first time I saw Barack Obama at the Democratic National Convention 4 years before he ran for, or 8 years before he ran for office, I looked at this guy and I said, this is a guy who really could legitimately be the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He portrayed himself so very well on stage. He was articulate and intelligent, yet at the same time not coming across as too intelligent or not exactly a common guy or a common man. So I have to do a little more looking around at the different Republicans that are out there. So I don't know. You're right. The VP rarely has any kind of influence on how people vote unless there's a really dividing kind of personality. And I don't think anyone wants to try and do that with their party.
Yeah, in the end, it's a very dumb choice to make to turn the people who are supposed to be voting with you and mm-hmm. for you against you. That's just idiotic. Makes no sense at all. Okay, so another story that came out this week that is going to be, I think, pretty big. There was a first grader who was suspended on Friday for he's in class and he's singing I'm Sexy and I Know It. And the teacher decided that that was sexual harassment and that she is now going to sue the school district. And do teachers have no brains left anymore? I mean, it's a commercial. I mean, it's from you pointed out to me that they use it in the...
That M&M's commercial for the new brown chocolate M&M that's actually not new. They're just bringing it back for us. But yeah, that's... I had not heard that song until I'd seen that commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've heard the entire mix of that track, but
it wasn't even in like classroom. It was in the lunchroom during lunchtime. And the teacher decided that he thought that he was serenading her with the song and it made her uncomfortable and that she's going to sue the school district now and the kid is suspended.
Absolutely ridiculous to me.
It's offensive.
It's a frivolous lawsuit that should be thrown out immediately.
Where's the brains from these teachers?
Yeah, he was a first grader?
Yeah, first grader.
Okay, ma'am, do you really think that a that would be about 6 years old 6 to 7, somewhere in that range. You think a 6 to 7-year-old is serenading you by saying that he's sexy and he knows it? He's singing a song he saw on television for an M&M's commercial. Get over yourself.
It's like, for her to see it that way, that shows that she's sicker than the kid is.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just sitting there, like, thinking that the teacher, like, it's that's her brain that is saying that this is a come on to me and that this is supposed to make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
is
sorry.
Is she fantasizing about six-year-olds?
And here's the thing. All the six-year-old would have to say is, like, no, I wasn't singing that to her. I was just singing it because I like the song.
I like M&M's.
I like M&M's and I like that song.
I like M&M's.
I mean, it's a cute commercial. It's funny. So kids enjoy it. Kids are going to watch it. They're going to repeat it. Is she going to go after the M&M's Mars company? Because how does she know that red M&M wasn't actually singing that to her? I mean, isn't that sexual harassment?
Awesome. That would really show us that this woman is just fucking nuts.
Yeah. Well, it's quite apparent already. I'm sorry. I can understand taking him to the principal's office and saying that this is inappropriate for you to do. But the suspension is absolutely ridiculous. And the fact that she's now decided that she's going to sue the school district because of one child singing a song that he saw on television.
I'm sexy and I know it.
Just absolutely baffling. I mean, just the sheer amount of money it's going to cost just to get the litigation started. And then hopefully have a judge say, this is frivolous and wasteful. Get it out of my court. You're talking tens of thousands of dollars right there.
That is an awesome thing that judges get to do. Get it out of my court.
Hey, I wish they would do it more often, because there certainly seems like a lot of ridiculous lawsuits that come up. Just, again, California passed that law to get rid of frivolous lawsuits. I don't know how. I'm going to look up. I'm going to find out something we can talk about later this week. Is how many lawsuits have been frivolous lawsuits have there been, or how many lawsuits have been deemed frivolous and then tossed out of court, like, initially and quickly, because it's supposed to free up our court system for what's important. And this is not an important lawsuit. This is a waste of the court's time. It's a waste of the school district's time and money, because the amount of money that they're going to have to use on the litigation and probably on the settlement that they're going to offer the teacher. I certainly hope that with that settlement, you're going to resign. Here's a check.
Oh, they don't do that. That has like dignity and respect and everything. Like, when you become a teacher, you just suck the system for as long as you can.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be the going order, that you just try to take as much as you can and complain about how much work it is when you only work like 60% of the time based upon all the extra time you get off that most people in normal jobs don't get. Mm-hmm. I hate these fucking teachers. They just want to bitch all the time about how hard the work is, and they're done at 3 p.m. and they get all of their summer off and they get 2 weeks off for Christmas break, and they get
a week off for spring break.
Nobody else gets that.
And maybe they'll have to go in for like one of those days just to be able to be ready for school to come back.
No.
I know. Now, and the argument that the teachers take their work home, like they have to grade papers and all that. Well, think of that time as when you have your 3 months in summer off, and you don't have to do anything unless you just, and if you choose to teach summer school, that's your choice so that you can make that extra money.
Extra money.
That's all that is.
Most people have no option of making extra money at their work.
Not during the summer.
It just doesn't happen. No. Not during any time of the year. There's no extra money you can make there. You get paid to do your job, and then you go home. I mean, here, it's so you get paid to do your job. You have so much free time that we're going to offer you this other job over here, too, so you can make some more money.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you're going to have 3 months off. How would you like to spend two of those teaching, and we'll pay you?
Teaching until noon.
Yeah. 1 o'clock at the latest, because, you got to turn in all your paperwork to show that the students were there so you can get the federal funding. So 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they're done. God, they got to go have a long lunch and then go home. Awful. And then they have to be at school the next morning at 8 o'clock.
God, it's awful.
God, it just must suck.
Hey, look, I'm not saying that there aren't bad things about being a teacher. I would hate being in front of a class every day. In some classes, I'm sure it would be awful.
Mm-hmm. And I respect people who do choose it as a profession and do it well.
But shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making good money for like the rest of your life. And you have so much free time. I just want you to shove it up your ass.
And no six-year-old is sexually harassing you, ma'am. Shut the hell up. Just.
You're crazy and I know it.
Yeah.
You're a crazy bitch. And you better hope that I don't actually have a kid that ever comes through your class, because I will show you what sexual harassment is. Hey, you never know how long it's going to take for things to come out. I was watching this VH1. I watched some crap-ass TV last night.
Okay.
One of the things I watched was the VH1 Behind the Music. They did a thing on Notorious B.I.G. and his murder. And there was an actual L.A. Police detective who says that he has on tape a confession to Biggie's murderer. He's not willing to say who it was, but it's going to be coming out this week because now there's people are trying to put in requests on finding out who so they can actually get some justice.
Yeah, the Freedom of Information Act would, if this stuff is actually held by a government agency, we have the right to know what it is.
I mean, there's been long speculation that there is a guy named Poochie who is the one that took him down. The only guy who I think of as Poochie is from The Simpsons.
Right, Poochie, right.
So I kind of hope that it is this Wardell Poochie Foose who took him down just so that Poochie becomes relevant again. By the time, he was a 36-year-old member of the mob Piru Bloods. And according to several death row insiders and FBI informants, Poochie was a down-for-the-cause hardcore gang member. Confidential sources from the death row entourage identified him in this book that he has coming out this week. This is why the story came up, because this LAPD detective is now putting out a book naming him.
Okay.
And that he is the one who shot Notorious B.I.G. and that he had shot many other people in the past for Suge Knight. So he was paid by Suge Knight to do the killing.
Is Suge still in jail or is he out?
What time is it? Because he's going in, he's coming out, he's going in, he's coming out. I mean, it always seems like that dude is back in jail again. Okay, so I do have a clip from the part where he talks about it on last night's episode of Behind the Music. I'm not sure if we're going out. Come on. Hey, Sonia, I just got a message from somebody that said that there's a network error and it's not broadcasting. Is that accurate? Okay, thanks. So we'll just keep recording like we are, though. Okay. Okay, this is taking a second to load up, but it will. Sorry for anybody who's listening to us live. Apparently, you're not actually listening to us live. That's okay. Everyone who listens to it later and downloads it, this will make no difference to them.
Exactly.
We'll just come in and we'll go.
So they're, what are they talking about? What? And then we'll be right back to where we were.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I even have a network being able to pull up things here, so I don't think I can even play what I'm looking for, and this has gone dead, and that's gone dead, so we could be a little screwed on this one. Give me 2 seconds. We'll cut it out if we have to. I think we're off the air, or off line completely, because I can't get to any of my stories or anything. It doesn't even matter. We're going to cut this part out later.
Right.
Yeah, network failure. Maybe we do. I had total deja vu right now.
Of?
This moment, like
you mean you're actually going through it right now?
What I was about to say and everything else.
Okay, I thought you meant as in like this has happened to us before, and I thought you were meaning that.
Okay, I think that we just recut the show, and we'll just go back to where we exit those guys out, and we'll just drop them from there because it's been kind of spicy the last 10 minutes, anyways. I think we're done.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
everybody. Welcome to... Everyone but everyone is screaming just to listen to Chickster's Nest here. Episode number 8, March 31st, 2012. And the Chickster will not lay an egg. I've got jokes. I've got yolks, folks. I'm already cracked up because I'm insane in the membrane. It's time, folks, for you to lend me an ear. Not you, Van Gogh. I mean live ears, not dead ones. I don't want ears of corn or porn in the morn. Chickster's insane in the membrane! I'm insane in the membrane! I wish everybody in Radioland a very, very happy April Fool's Day. And remember, he who was born a fool is never cured. I seriously hope life isn't just a big joke, because the Chickster doesn't get it. There once was a fellow O'Doul who found red spots on his tool. His doctor, a cynic, said, "Get the hell out of me clinic and wipe off that lipstick, you effing fool." Today, my friends, ladies, worms, and germs, ladies and gentilia, and dickheads with fur balls for faces. Welcome, everybody, to Chickster's Nest. Hello once again to the Brass Ball Society in Alhambra. Yes, the Shaveless Pussy Club in Santa Monica. The Choke the Chicken Club in Chinatown, San Francisco. Hello, pimps and chimps. And speaking about chimps, today's show is dedicated to Spank the Monkey, along with talk about apes, monkeys, orangutans, gorillas, and much, much more. Hello to the Spanky Yankee Club in Brooklyn, New York, the Holy Moly Free Holy Vagina Club in Tijuana, and the Zebra Ass Club in Ensenada, the Painted Squirrel Nut Club in Sacramento. Hello and welcome, the Beverly Hills Blowtorch Club. Hello, Ding Dong Club in Waco, Texas. The Suntan Scrotum Club of Death Valley. The Stamp Lookin' and Lesbo Club of Fresno. Hello, TWA Pilots and TWAT. What did you say? I can't quite figure it out. Isn't that sick? Hello, everybody. Hello, Liquor in the Front and Poker in the Rear Club in Detroit. The Steeler Wife Cheetah Club in Pittsburgh. The Chip and Dip Snatch Club in Wyoming. Hello, the Good, the Bad, and the Plain Effin' Ugly. Hello, the Glee Club and Pee Wee Club in New Mexico. Welcome, everybody, to Chickster's Nest. Chickster belongs in an insane asylum in a padded cell. You know why? Because I'm insane in the membrane. 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 I'm crazy. Chickster should be nicknamed Peanut Butter because he's half nuts. Skid Row Studios built with integrity. Spit and gum of the finest. Wine bottles, Coca-Cola bottles, beer cans, orange juice containers, and cork balls, along with prophylactics and tampons. All you need is a shopping cart, a transistor radio, 2-buck chug, a blanket, a toothbrush, and a Bible. Just like the Chickster says, you're all insane in the membrane! Yes, my friends, life goes on, and this being April Fool, the first Fool of April, some do say, is set apart for All Fool's Day. But why the people call it so, nor I nor they themselves do not know. But on this day, the people are sent on purpose for pure merriment. Wise men don't need advice. Fools won't take it. Wise men learn more from fools than fools from the wise. Silence is foolish if we are wise, but wise if we are foolish. A common mistake that people make when trying to design something completely foolproof is to underestimate the integrity of complete fools. You don't have to fool all the people all the time. You just have to fool enough to get elected. There are more fools in the world than there are people. Take all the fools in the world, and there would be no fun living in it. Yes, my friends, if you send a damn fool to St. Louis and you don't tell them he's a damn fool, they'll never find out. They'll never find out. There was an old female chimp from Peru, and she dreamt she was chewing her shoe. She woke up in the night in a terrible fright. She found it was perfectly true. Saturday Pazzi swung by his tail to his offspring, both female and male. From your offspring, my dears, in a couple of years, may involve a professor at Yale. It's a creature, not monkey, not me. Something more than those chimps, less than we. Sort of halfway between a gorilla and a teen. That's your mythical ape man, you see. A thing that would sure make me gape man is the sight of a well-preserved ape man. They must have a few, but they hide them from view. The government, too much red tape, man. Now, a monkey is sitting in a tree smoking a joint when a lizard walks past and looks up and says to the monkey, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" The monkey says, "Smoking a joint. Come up and have some." So the lizard climbs up and sits next to the monkey to smoke a few doobies. And after a while, the lizard says his mouth is dry and he's going to drink from the river. The lizard is so stoned that he leans too far over and falls into the river. A crocodile sees this and swims over to the lizard and helps him to the side. Then asks the lizard, "What's the matter with you?" The lizard explains to the crocodile that he was just sitting and smoking a joint with a monkey in a tree and got too stoned and then fell into the river while taking a drink. The crocodile says he has to check this out and walks into the jungle and finds the tree where the monkey is sitting, finishing a joint. And he looks up and says, "Hey, you! Hey, you!" The monkey looks down and says, "Fuck, dude. How much water did you drink?" And to top it off, the monkey got the munchies and craved a banana. But there's no banana to be found. Just a banana boat out there. There's a banana boat out there.
Come and me one go home. Work all night and a drink a rum.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me one go home.
If
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch. Daylight come and me one go home. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch. Daylight come and me one go home.
Day, he's a day.
Daylight come and me one go home.
Daylight
come and me one go home.
A ripe banana.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come and we won't go home. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot.
Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
Day-o, day-o.
Daylight come and we won't go home.
That was Banana Boat. That's Harry Belafonte. I got this letter here. It says, Dear Swami, my pet monkey and my wife do not get it on. I love them both. They both have threatened to leave my thatch hut. Who shall I choose? Swami, what's the answer?
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here, Chickster. You know what I mean. I got the answer. Choose the monkey. Because if you have a hard time deciding over a pet monkey or your wife, then your wife should just leave you.
Thank you, Swami. You're listening to Chickster's Nest, Skid Row Radio, SkidRowStudios.com. And if you have something to say to me, call 1-800-893-9562. That's 1-800-893-9562. And talk. Talk to the Chickster. Do you have balls? I'm insane in the membrane. I'm insane in the membrane. You got it. I'm insane in the membrane. Tarzan the Monkey Man, swinging from a rubber band. He slips. He falls. He's hanging from his balls. They rip. They tear. They're flying everywhere. King Kong went to Hong Kong to play ping pong with his ding dong. When I'm dead, bury me and hang my balls on a cherry tree. And when they're ripe, take a bite. Don't blame me if you puke at night. There once was a jumping monkey, and jumping he would always be. He had sex in a jiffy and was proud of his stiffy. But jumping now would not be too nifty. With a bandaged shaft as he drank his favorite draft, how long before they take off the cast? And how long would his erection last? And it's hard to stop thinking about the past, because sex used to be a blast, and now all he could do is ache and try to think about a monkey shake. And one day soon, he'll have another piece of cake. Oh, joy, he said. I could hardly wait. I just hope I can find my effing monkey mate. And he did. He found Chiquita.
I'm Chiquita Banana.
That's Chiquita.
and my banana is throbbing right now. Oh, hello once again, Fox Bunnies. I guess you know who this is, don't you? Welcome, my lovely radio listening audience. I tell you, this is Libra Raunchy. But come on, it's okay. I mean, you can call me Cucaracha. You know, I think I got you. Pacha, spanking my monkey. You better watch me and you better listen to my crotch throb. Something's popping up. Oh, now get down. Get down. Hello, ladies and gentilia. Frogs, gizzards, and wizards. Ladies with dildos and men with fake vaginas wearing a merkin. Today's show on Chickster's Nest is all about monkeys. I had to spank my monkey so many times, it's ready to fall off. Catch me if you can. All of me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see? I'm no good without ya. You know, the monkey that I loved most was Cheetah, born in 1911 and passed away in 1980. You know, Cheetah was Tarzan's sidekick and starred in the 1932 film Tarzan the Ape Man with my hero, Johnny Weissmuller. When Cheetah died, Tarzan started to yell, "New underwear!" Now that's Tarzan for you. That's my hero. Well, folks, and till next time, I'll be seeing you in old familiar places that my heart embraces all night long in a small cafe. Hernando's hideaway. We kissed and smooched, and I love you. We drank a little bit of vermouth. I'll be seeing you. Anyway, folks, I just want to say I have to go now, but, you know, I'll see you soon. I'm off to the races again.
Beautiful day for the race. Stooge Hand is the favorite today. Assault is in there. Dog Biscuit is 3-1. Safety Pin has been scratched. And at 20-1, Beetle Bomb. Now the horses are approaching the starting gate, and there they go! And it's Stooge Hand going to the front. Cabbage is second on the rail. Beautiful Linda is third by a length. And Beetle Bomb. Around the first turn, Stooge Hand is still in front. Cabbage is second by a head.
Cabbage by a head!
Beautiful Linda is third. And Beetle Bomb. Into the back stretch. Dog Biscuit is now leading the pack. Lady Evelyn is second, very close. Banana is coming up through the butts.
Banana coming up through the butts!
And Beetle Bomb. At the half, Stooge Hand still out in front. Apartment House is second with plenty of room. Assault is passing Battery.
Assault Battery!
Notary Sojak is fourth. And in last place by 10 lengths, I believe it is. Yes, it is Beetle Bomb. Around the turn, heading for home. It's Stooge Hand and Dog Biscuit and Girdle in the stretch. Flying Sylvester is third. And Mother-in-Law nagging in the rear. And now they come down to the wire, and it's number one, and now number two, and it's very close, it'll either be a photo finish or an oil painting. And now Lewis leads with the left, and Lewis is in there slugging, and it's a battle, and now they're tearing hair. There's hair all over the ring, there's hair all over the place. I don't know whose hair it is. It's mine. And there goes the winner!
Yay! Yay, Beetlebot! Yeah! Happy April Fool's Day, everybody! And happy monkey time! Now, don't touch that knobby, that keypad, launch pad, Kotex pad, whatever! In a little while, you will hear from Claustrophobia with the news. And coming up very soon, you will hear from Una Moon once again with astrology, words of wisdom, rhyme and song. So don't go away. You're listening to Chickster's Nest on SkidRowRadio.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the best station in the nation.